conversation. It's easier than you know. Start a conversation. Nobody should feel, nobody should feel alone.
And the final guest that I've invited to speak on my podcast is my beloved Kate Alderton, actress, theatre maker, and NHS Advanced Communication Skills Facilitator. I can't believe I managed to say that. It's a bit of a tongue twister. Communicating is her gift. Speaking and listening as art forms are something that she teaches to people in the NHS and people in many institutions and organisations in the UK to help make sure that conversation and space can happen. She understands the value of creating a listening environment. And that was a mind-blowing concept. I was like, it's hard for us to hear or listen to anything if we don't create the listening environment to begin with. And I wanted to talk to Kate about all of those practices in context of parents having to have a conversation with children around the use of tech and smartphones. A conversation as opposed to a confrontation. We all know how complex it is to have to tell your children they can't do something. This is not an easy space to be working in at the moment. So I hope what Kate has to offer will be of some assistance to any of the parents or teachers navigating this issue at the moment. Welcome, Kate Alderton, actress, theatre maker, dreamer, and communications skills facilitator, which is why I'm talking to you. But before I do talk to you, for the benefit of the listener and the watcher, Kate is also my partner and my beloved of almost 5 years. And reason I want to talk to you is, of course, to do with our project, Super Connected, which we're just about to take on tour. And it's very much based around the ideas that smartphones and social media have changed the way we communicate. And that's what I began researching in 2016. I started writing the songs, and then we made the film in 2019 together. And now in 2024, this amazing movement that is concerned for children's use of smartphones has just come out of almost out of nowhere. But of course, it's been building for a long time. And this is all because of the author, Jonathan Haidt, who's released this fantastic book manual called The Anxious Generation, which for me was just kind of like, oh God, it's kind of been legitimized that this can be explored now by everybody. That it's been cool that we've had social media and technology and and all kinds of exciting things have happened, but all kinds of things that have not been very positive have happened as a direct result from that, which I've explored in my music, we've explored in the film, Jonathan is explored in his book, and really advocating for parents to do something about this. And that's why I want to talk to somebody I know who's one of the best listeners I've ever met and also knows a little about helping people manifest change in difficult circumstances. So how does it work when you're talking to NHS doctors and nurses about dealing with complex situations?
Part of my purpose as a facilitator is creating spaces where people can really get comfortable with doing less in conversation and really, really listening and really using silence, so that the people that they're talking to who are going through incredibly difficult emotional moments, life-changing moments in their life, often around death and dying and diagnosis, have time to think time to process, time to come up with their own solutions. And there's something around creating that ability to get used to being in silence, in the discomfort of being in silence with people, and not coming up with solutions, that can bring out the most extraordinary part of human nature. So in a medical context, which is where I practice a lot of my facilitation, it can be career changing, and it can help people return to be feeling humans again in very high stressed jobs. So thinking about, did I answer your question?
Definitely. You did answer my question.
Off into the silence.
Yeah. Time to think and space. It's kind of impossible to do when you've got a smartphone full of apps, isn't it?
Yeah.
But beyond being a person that's trying to disentangle themselves from a relationship with their smartphone, beyond that, and into the territory of being a mom or a dad who has to present to their child the idea that they won't have a smartphone until a certain age.
Mm.
How do the skills that you teach become part of that conversation?
Yeah, good question. I mean, obviously, the way we approach these conversations is going to be really different for every family, every child and parent, depending on how they communicate and what works for them. You know, some people might want to sit around a table. Some people might want to go for a walk and have a conversation. Sometimes conversations can feel quite intense around tables. But in terms of how those skills translate, I suppose one of the things that's helped me most as a parent, that I've kind of pinched from my work as a facilitator, is this idea of finding out as much as you can before you tell anything. And in our work that we do, we'd call that gathering before you give. And so especially around a conversation that can be as complicated and sensitive and potentially challenging as wanting to put a restriction on a mobile phone or change the way that we've been doing things with our children, I think approaching a conversation where you find out as much from them about how they feel about it, about what they see as the challenges and the benefits before going into any kind of telling, can really help create a sense of equality as much as possible with kids, because we want them to be good thinkers. We want them to make critical choices and be discerning. And in order to do that, they need to be able to think for themselves, you know. So I think there's been some amazing strategies I've seen bubbling up because of Jonathan's book and the movement that's sprung up because of it, smartphone-free childhood. You know, just watching how parents are sharing how they approach the conversation and the very diverse ways that they are looking at it, has been really inspiring. But I think, yeah, gathering, finding out before you tell, because these kids are the experts of what they're seeing, of what they're experiencing, of how hard it is, and what it's like to have the pressures, not just from their friends, but also of the apps themselves. And I think that's a conversation worth having.
I like the gather before you give. And I wonder, and I might be a stretch here, but you know, I'm a classic autistic pattern maker. I like the idea that gathering what you give, obviously when you're one-to-one, whether it's with a patient or your child, to really hear what's going on before you start offering up any ideas, thoughts of your own. But that's almost a little bit like social media and YouTube as well, in terms of us being rewired to make statements. They're called platforms, aren't they? Platforms are things you stand on and you announce all the time. And if somebody else is saying something and you've got to say something, then it is what the last song on the album says. Everybody's talking, but they're talking all at once. And it's it's just noise, isn't it? I'm not saying conversations don't happen on social media. They do, of course. But for the most part, we have had a kind of rewiring to think it's okay just to walk into a room and say, this is what I think. Which is the complete opposite to what you're talking about, isn't it? Where you're walking up to somebody and saying, what do you have to say? What do you want to tell me?
Because the interesting thing that happens between humans is the space in between the different opinions they have. That's why I'm really an advocate of diversity of opinion and people thinking differently. There's nothing wrong with people having different opinions, because it's what happens when those two opinions meet and exchange ideas that can be very interesting and new. And social media has that real capacity to be incredibly polarized. So people like or don't like, love or angry face, you know, then polarized thinking and opinions is running rife on social media. It's not a place where dialogue is easy. As you say, it's not impossible, but it's not easy on social media.
I'm going to share something personal that only exists between us, just for the benefit of some of the listeners or watchers, is that quite often that I post something on social media, or one of the kind volunteers that works with me will post it for me, and something that matters a lot. And when there's no engagement, Kate will say, "It's not the place." And I love that. And it's just not. And it's not a place, is it? It's not. It's not actually a place.
It's not a place.
It's a territory for data colonialism. But it's not territory for human beings with beating hearts and you know, and things that we care about and share about, actually share, you know. But I love that. It's and remembering that it's not the place, I think, is not easy, because so much is happening in that weird space.
Yeah. And for kids, you know, when I think about kids sharing their new vulnerable art, thoughts, photographs of themselves in that space where people either like and they feel that, or don't like it and they feel that, or don't do anything and they also feel that, you know, the kind of non-engagement can be hurtful in those spaces for these developing hearts and minds. And you know, it's not the place for our young ideas and our young ones.
Yeah, I mean, if I can get upset about it at my age, it's going to be really upsetting to people that are very young. What's it been like, you know, being the mum of two kids growing up in a play-based childhood and then slowly bringing in tech into their life?
Yeah, it's hard, you know. I think it's for any parent, and obviously all kids play. You know, my two had a interesting early years. They spent a lot of time in forest school, so they spent a lot of time in the mud, and learning outside, playing outside, and technology was very. We held off technology for a really long time. So neither of them got phones until they were 13, I think. And that wasn't easy, you know, because it comes in thick and fast, and the pressures to surrender to the requests for technology it's really hard, you know. And
the schools that they've both been in as well, obviously using computers for homework and all that kind of stuff too, right?
So there's a lot of...
I was laughing a little bit because they went to a Steiner school at one point, didn't they? And I went to a Steiner school. But when you said they got their first phones when they were 13, I'm like, I got my first phone when I was 28. the difference, which is great as well, isn't it? Because because there are some features of the advancement of technology which are fantastic. But yeah, sorry, carry on. You're talking about what it was like. I mean, specifically around the time we met and their kind of wide-eyed open to the internet because it's the only thing we can look through on in during the lockdowns.
Yeah, no, it was really, you know, it was interesting during the lockdown because it was technology for, I think, all of us, not just the kids, was a gift because it kept people connected, but it was also really hard to keep it at bay because the pressure to get phones and be online all the time was really hard. And I had to have some really uncomfortable conversations with the kids, you know, about when they could get phones, when that felt right for us as a family. And every family is going to be really different. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that, you know, different families have different needs. They have different choices around technology, and that is fine. You know, a lot of the work I do is really about creating space where it is okay to think differently. It's okay to have a different opinion about things. What's right for one family isn't necessarily right for another family. But certainly, you know, part of the challenge with my two was just taking a deep breath and just being okay with being uncomfortable with the conversation.
And what do they say now, where you may have restricted them at some point in the past? How do they feel about it now?
Yeah. Now they're kind of, you know, looking back, they're 16 and 18 now. And I think looking back, although it was hard at the time, you know, it was both of them told me it would be difficult socially not to have mobile phones at the age that they wanted.
And was it difficult for them?
Yeah, it was in some ways and not in others. But I think looking back now at 15 and 18, both of them have told me separately that they're glad that we made that choice as a family. Although it was a bit of a choiceless choice because, you know, I was quite boundaried around it. But they're grateful that we made that choice.
This is really great to hear because I think the fear at the moment for many parents is that you're going to fall out with your kid and they're not going to forgive you. And as anyone knows, parenting is a, you know, it's racked with guilt a lot of the time. Are you doing the right thing? Are you doing too much of the, or not enough? And, you know, it's a really complicated full-time job, isn't it, being a parent? And you're hearing them now saying, I'm really glad you did that, Mom. I mean, that's really important to share because it's a small sacrifice that's worth a lot more in the long term, isn't it? Giving a child a chance to develop without advertising companies in their pocket.
And I mean, it's not easy, you know, it's not easy to approach that conversation with kids because there is a massive amount of pressure, not just from their peers, but also from the very tech companies that are creating the apps. And I think it's really important to say, but I don't think either of us are anti-tech. You know, we're both get a lot out of technology, but it's the minds and hearts that are behind the tech and the apps that I have concern around, and the kids don't really stand a chance when they're young against these multi-billion.
No, I mean, as you said, I'm not anti-technology. I mean, in the opposite, you know, I was the first on everything. I had an iPod when people were saying, "What's that? That'll never catch on." And, you know, I'm a first adopter, but I was also one of the first to start trying to bail out of tech. And before we met, you know, in 2016, it was really hard with my peer group as an adult talking to other people in the music industry and saying, yeah, what's the next album about, Tim? I said, well, it's kind of about people that are struggling with mental health issues because of the way that they're using their devices and connecting online and social media. And I was just laughed at the house pretty much all the time. I mean, some musicians who I love, they did, but they were just like, it's just the way the world is now. Mm-hmm. So to me, Jonathan Haidt arriving with The Anxious Generation in 2024 is just as I was about to kind of not give up, but just kind of go, I'm a lunatic. And the idea that I think that this is a serious issue, it's just never going to land with anybody. And then Jonathan Haidt comes along the anxious generation, the smartphone-free childhood movement starts up, and I suddenly feel a little bit vindicated. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I didn't spend 7 years working on an album and a film and a theatre show with you for no reason. But while they're really focused on children, I feel that this is what Super Connected is doing, is it, we're there for parents, we're there for adults and grandparents too, as we show in the film, you know, this generational divide where you need grandparents, you need great mentors, and mentors is kind of, you know, that's the answer when you're going, well, who's going to be with my child if they're not with their phone or their iPad all the time? Real mentors, eye to eye, you know. And what Jonathan says in the book, the play-based childhood that we've lost. So no, I'm not anti-technology. I know you're not. And it's not about going back completely. It's about just grabbing some of the things from the past and bringing them into the present, so that the future is going to be much, much more sustainable for young minds turning into adults. And your role in Super Connected has also changed a lot. You began, because I cast you, as an actor, and that's, and being directed by me in the film, to then now directing me on stage with the film. So you've kind of got all of it now. And from what we experienced, I want to talk about what happened last year, because this beautiful accident happened where we just thought, yeah, we're going to show the film and we're going to play the songs, and it's just really a great experience, you know, entertaining and informing. But because we asked everybody to pop their phones into pouches for the duration of the show, which is about just under 90 minutes. It's not a long time. This extraordinary communal happening occurred after the show that wouldn't have happened if everyone had had their phones. And we didn't know that. This was like the special treat. And that's why we're now going on tour with it, because this surprise element of Super Connected popped up. Can you talk about that? Because you were the one that spotted it and said, gotta do that as well. You know, that's build that in.
The real surprise, I think, for all of us was at the end, we invited everybody up onto the stage and they still had their phones locked away. And then suddenly this sort of emergent field happened, because everybody was there without a phone for the first time. I mean, I can't even begin to remember the last time I was in a space with, you know, 150 people without a phone in sight.
I still reel looking at the photographs of that night, the after the screenless social, and seeing all these happy people looking, chatting, talking to each other, sharing what they thought about the experience of the movie and everything. And not a phone in sight. It was like looking photographs from the 90s, which is cool, because of course it's not the 90s, and afterwards you can go back and get your MacBook at home and do, you know, switch into Netflix. But just sometimes to be able to remember what it's like to be embodied and with the other person, it's so beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, it felt like a real kind of returning to something that I think loads of us had almost forgotten about, which is just the being in a space with people, you know, without the comfort sometimes. Sometimes it can feel quite, you know, if you're a bit, I'm a bit shy socially sometimes. And, you know, in a social situation, if I'm feeling a bit awkward, I might flip out my phone and have a little scroll just to sort of ease that awkward moment. But actually there's something about being in that space where that isn't really an option, which creates a whole different feeling with people. And it means, you know, certainly for me, you kind of reach out to other people a bit more. You just sit with your own discomfort and get a bit curious about what that is, why you might be feeling shy. And then something else will happen. And I think that's what's really, you know, when I think about what that was like, the Screener Social at the end of the Roundhouse show, but also what that is like for kids that then, you know, they have these things in their pockets so often, and that ability to just sit and ride out the awkwardness, the anxiousness, the moment when nothing's happening in life, maybe a bit of boredom. We're in real danger of losing that brilliant bit of in-betweenness in life.
Yeah, it's funny you say about the boredness. I've just written a blog about my play-based childhood, and play as in, like, you know, painting and music and play. I'm so lucky that, you know, I grew up in a kind of arts and crafts theatrical family, so my mum was just constantly, day off school, it's okay, let's do painting today, or whatever it was. But I just published a thing about that, and it's really amazing to have time, isn't it, to not have the answer. It's like Tom Waits said about Google. He said, why do you want to Google it? I like to wonder. And it's like, definitely as an adult, I suppose maybe because I'm an artist or whatever, I'm a performer, I like wondering. But definitely when you're a child, that's when you cultivate wondering. No one can wonder if you've got a machine that says it has the answer for you all the time. Mm-hmm. And sure, in work situations and in urgent situations, I think something like Google is fantastic. But it's under the age of 14, I want the wondering and the dreaming, because as adults, I think, and to be honest, I would not have written Super Connected without this approach, that we take our childhood with us as we get older. And I don't know anybody who doesn't think to themselves, oh, I miss those simple years, those when things were, you know, just easy and there wasn't all this information and overload. And if you have all that information and overload during your childhood, what are you carrying with you as you get into it's hard being an adult, it's hard being in the world for anyone. But that spirit of childhood that some of us have been lucky enough to carry with us is so valuable. And I think that's what Jonathan Haidt is kind of advocating for. It's not about getting rid of what the amazing things that we're coming up with technology. It's about not forgetting the great stuff that we had before as well. Both, isn't it? Mm. Integration.
Yeah. I think that's what's really amazing about this kind of this emergent groups that have come up from inspired by the book, because suddenly people are talking about it, they're coming up with conversations and ideas and strategies and sharing things that they might do with their children to have the conversation, make a different choice as a family. And it's a really diverse field, you know, not everybody agrees, but it's open and it's really welcoming. And I think because it's such a complex issue, technology and kids, just having a bit of breathing space around it and time, you know, but a lot of the work I do is around this book, Nancy Klein's book, Time to Think, creating some space where we have time to think about it, rather than just hurtling forwards with it at the speed that the technology is evolving and going itself, is really valuable, because we operate at a human speed. We don't operate at the speed of technology, but technology is very fast. So it feels like this kind of rising tide is actually creating space to really look at it and think, what do we want to be doing?
I love that. I love what you said about the idea that it's okay to slow down. It's actually okay. And that's a hard thing for me to tell myself when I'm working on stuff, as you know. But I'm trying to. But it what you said reminds me of what two things Douglas Rushkoff said, and one of them, which I put on the album cover, actually, it's in the sleeves, was the, you know, when if you're in doubt about anything, press pause. You know, it's like pressing the pause button is okay. It's allowed. And of course, fear of missing out and all those things have been amplified by social media. Like, you've got to be on there. You don't want to miss out on anything. And oh my God, you know, I think of my whole childhood and my teens and all the things that I missed out on meant I was imagining things in my own head, and which inspired me to write and create and do things. And you don't have to be an artist to do that. Everyone's an artist anyway. And all children are artists. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I think upsets me the most when I think about myself as a child. If I'd have had a smartphone, there's no way I'd have had the, you know, the fortune of being in the kind of creative work I've done for the last 25 years. I mean, that comes from having that space, doesn't it?
It really does. I mean, we need, as humans, artists, children, whoever, we need time to dream. You know, I think stuff comes out of silence and slow time that could never come out of any other time. Art and, you know, the ponderings and the wanderings that are going to see us through however we move ahead as a kind of culture and as a people living on the planet, it's not going to come through speed.
No.
Technology, it is going to come through people relating to each other and having a chance to dialogue with each other about the complexity of what we face in all sorts of different areas. And you know,
I'm hoping this chat will be helpful for some parents. So I just want to mention that something that Douglas said, which I think is a kind of proposal for an educational model in the future, that instead of you know, just giving kids everything that's available now, he had this beautiful idea of taking the arc of human history's evolution of technology and placing that on the child's evolution, so that, you know, maybe they get a cassette player when they're 8 or 9, and maybe they get a CD player when they're 13, maybe get onto MP3s 14 or 15. I mean, not exactly like that, but a sense that it's okay for the actual evolution of humanity's understanding of technology to sort of be imprinted for one individual human as they get older. And of course, by the time they're 16, 17, 18, I mean, I'm not an expert, but then it's like everything, you've got everything, by which time the mind is developed to a point where they've got all the sacred stuff, the imagination, the ability to be with themselves. Like Sherry Turkle says, be alone. It's okay. It's not being lonely. It's another relationship. And that's the main relationship. That's what that got me writing with Super Connected, because my addiction to social media went through the roof before we met. I mean, you think I was bad when we met, but, you know, actually, when we met, the whole of Super Connected was made on my dumb phone.
Yeah, you had a dumb phone.
My orange Nokia.
Yeah.
And I didn't have it on set ever. I think about 6 months I went without a smartphone to make the film, which I'm pleased about, and I plan to do that, something like that, again. But and actually, because you haven't seen it, I've got this now, because I only got it yesterday. It's the light phone. So
inky.
Some people will know about this, but these phones are kind of digital dumb phone. Well, dumb phones are digital, but it doesn't do anything apart from calls and texts, and it's super light. And as you said, I feel a bit lighter when I'm using this now. It's secondary phone at the moment because I still need the other one for work. But the light phone, I think, is one of the greatest inventions so far in this century.
What do you feel the difference is when you're speaking on that one versus another one?
There's loads of differences, but you know why I got it? I got it because of my eyes. I've got a lot of issues with my eyes, and so I'm all about e-ink at the moment. I don't need a retina display. Yeah. I don't want all the colours either. I like the look of looking at a book. So that's what that is, you know, when you go through it all. I'm not sponsored by Lightphone, by the way, but I really think they're amazing for anybody that's looking for something simpler to experience. And I kind of feel like when I was talking to you on it yesterday, I just feel more in the conversation because there's no temptation to do anything else on it. You know? And they're 3 times less expensive than an iPhone. So Anyway, I just thought I'd mention it for any parents. The light phone is literally, it has brought more light into my life in the last 48 hours since I had it.
Very
I
good.
Love it. You'll want one.
I want one.
But going back to the screenless socials and how those are going to work when we go on tour. I mean, what do you think? Do you think it'll always be like it was last year when we did it at the Roundhouse, or do you think it's going to be different? Do you think it'll evolve into its own thing?
I think I'm so curious to know what it feels like, particularly because the conversation is more on the map at the moment around social media, you know, because there's this kind of burgeoning movement around it. And so, you know, certainly my experience, whenever we have talked about this project to anybody, they have their own tales of what they're struggling with in their family life or their personal life around social media and technology. So for me, the Screener Social is not only this amazing opportunity to meet in real space and time, hopefully without a mobile phone, although it is optional, you know, we're not kind of we're not forcing anyone to lock their phone in a pouch, but I'd really gently encourage them to experiment with that. But what I'm really curious about is finding out how the film and the show resonates with people, hearing people's stories, and getting the conversation going in real time space around what you've written about, because I think you have had this amazing ability to be able to digest very weighty academic books and material around this subject matter and spin it into art and music and film. And I think it's a great way to bring people together to explore that.
Yeah, I mean, thank you, darling. I mean, the academic side of it is always like, I guess with music, the UK's not been massively supportive of music that's sort of rooted in long books and what they have to have. I think, you know, Manic Street Preachers managed it, and of course Kate Bush and David Bowie a long time ago. At the moment, not so much. So again, it's not been easy in the music side of things, trying to sort of make it okay to talk about something that matters. But I think that might be the UK, and maybe in America it's slightly different. I think it's because it's so heavily politicized there. I mean, I say that, and you know, if Tom Robinson's listening, he'll probably go, there's plenty of people talking about this, but I haven't come across them yet. I hope there are, because I'm not the only person that's writing and singing songs about the possibility that we might imagine a future with slightly less activity on smartphones. Hopefully I'm not the only one. And certainly the students that I've mentored at Water Bear, they've got a much stronger resolve when it comes to doing something real versus doing something digital. I mean, I feel very hopeful from the experiences I've had there, and they're tech geniuses, the students at the college. So but they don't show the signs of I don't know, trauma and isolation that I explored in Super Connected, which is, you know, which was based on the patient that my friend Ricky was treating in Italy. I know what I wanted to ask you about as well is that as a mum, do you think that the increase of sort of holistic activities like yoga and cacao ceremonies and all the beautiful things that we can go and do that are good for us? I mean, massive spike culturally, certainly in the UK in the last 10 years, like, everyone's going, oh, I'm going to this class, I'm going to that class. I sometimes think it's not just because of the activity. It's because people want to be with each other. And more than ever, because we've been, I mean, I don't have stats, but it's something like 7 hours on phones for everybody every day or something like that. It's insane.
That's a lot.
It's a lot, isn't it? Spent on like screen time, like the average thing. I think maybe that's the American one. But yeah, do you think it's just that? Do you think people just want to be with each other? Is that why the screenless social worked that we didn't even plan last year?
I think it's a really interesting question, and sort of not as a mum, just as a me, I think, probably.
Yeah.
I think it's a really interesting question because these platforms are all built around keeping people connected. And I have to stress that people, you know, they really do that for a lot of people as well. There are people that are isolated or living in places where they can't see people, or not able to leave the house. And for those, you know, for a lot,
like me with my mum in the pandemic when she was poorly in Spain, you know, I couldn't have done it without tech. Yeah, yeah, I couldn't have looked
and
after.
And there can be places for community and real dialogue, but I guess, you know, they can also make us less inclined to go out and meet people in real life because we feel like we're constantly communicating and connected. So maybe there is something in there, in a kind of a longing to redress the balance that make people, you know, more moving more towards connecting in real time and space again. I hope so. It's certainly what I want.
What you've just said feels very much like it's a self-awareness that we have to cultivate. What you just said there made me think of being a responsible drinker. You know, somebody who knows their limit, also knows when they're going to be a bit of a difficult person because they've drunk too much, and they just know. And it's that part of smartphones and social media that I feel I've just kind of got my head around over the last 3 or 4 years, but that we all need to look at it like that. That it's not just something that you don't think about when you're doing it. You kind of, I mean, you know, companies have introduced things like having screen time on it, but there's always an option to switch that off.
It's very hard to stay conscious. I think it's hard to stay conscious as an adult. And you know, I quite, as you know, I take off social media off my phone constantly, and the kids do as well, you know, they with the few things they're on. But I think for younger kids, you know, working with that analogy of alcohol or something else, you know, to imagine that they have the capacity to be able to manage that kind of self-reflection and responsibility around something that is being fueled by a business model that doesn't have their best interests at heart is, you know, I think that's where the real danger lies, because that's a very hard thing to fight against as an adult.
Yeah.
And be conscious of as an adult. So for kids, I think that's why we really need conversation around it, because it isn't just only social media, you know, it's a massive, massive.
I think the analogy is the same. You don't give the car keys to a kid, you know, you don't let them into, you know, an establishment of where people get drunk. And there's all kinds of good things that we encourage our children to experience in life with, you know, without stuff that's going to throw them into. It's too early to think seriously about stuff. It's about play, isn't it? It's about play. And I guess that those of us that are in music and theater and, you know, acting, Mark Rylance says that. And when I worked at the Globe, he said, we're here to play, and it's a privilege because that's what we only get to do when we're children. And it's true. And what he said is so like resonant with this situation, where that's the only time you get to just play, imagine, pretend, and you know, dream. And you can't do that with this endless intrusion from companies that are. I think whether it's a, I'm not a conspiracy theorist who thinks there's a bad person behind it all. I just think it's got out of control.
Yeah.
And it's so new that no one's realized, God, this, we're here now. Smoking was like advertised by Hollywood in the 30s. By the 70s, we're going, no, this stuff is causing all manner of illnesses.
Yeah.
And I think we're getting there quite quickly, thanks to Jonathan Haidt.
Absolutely. I mean, it feels like we're kind of catching up with the data. That people like Jonathan has been thankfully really gathering together to have a good look at it. But it's you know, it's the horse has bolted very quickly because the horse is made of digital. And it's fast.
Yeah, I have a dream that companies in Silicon Valley will just change their businesses. I think this is a bit of a dream, but I don't believe however powerful they are, and they really are. They are the technocracy. They run the planet. There's no pretending that government has as much power as them. They don't. And I do think they can't argue with all the parents of the world, and they won't want to, because they're businesses. But getting the conversation to be taken seriously is only going to happen by ordinary people coming together, which I think is happening through the Anxious Generation, or the Free the Anxious Generation movement. And we saw it happening at Super Connected Live. And we'll hopefully see it again this summer.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? People have to take action, whatever action they can. It's not like storming Parliament or something, but being with community, being in embodied spaces, doing stuff where you go, oh my God, I didn't pick my phone up for 2 hours. I can't believe it. Yeah. Which is what half the people at the show said, isn't it? Like, I can't remember the last time I didn't have my phone on for like 2 hours. It's possible. It's possible.
Yeah. It's totally possible. And it's a really enjoyable space. And it's a real, you know, what I love about it is that people can have a conversation about what's coming through for them. You know, there's finally these spaces for conversation around it, because everybody's got a version of what it's doing with them, for them.
Yeah.
And
it takes me to Ken Robinson.
Yeah.
You know, the element with Ken Robinson, that idea that we're all artists, as we're born artists, and that those that we see in adulthood who are artists were just lucky to kind of take their childhood with them as they went into life. And I think that's one of the things that excites me the most about this movement. It's not about being against something, it's being for something. As you know, it's all people I'm mentoring. I love the idea that you have them as well. We both have people say, how do you make the things you make, and what's your creative process? I get asked that a lot. You've been asked it. And the creative process is literally what happens when we forget time. And, you know, this time that we've got to do this. And of course, every social media app is based on time. This. Instagram especially. I mean, it's just like it's completely like rigid and locked into its own agenda. You've got to keep up with it. You've got to keep going. Creative process, whatever you're creating, whether you're a chef or a singer or an actor or a designer, is you're just connected to yourself. And that's what excites me about the idea. There might, if this goes the way that we want it to, and there's going to be a generation of kids that grow up and the art is going to take over the world. Which is the only thing I've ever wanted. It's like, you know, art is what happens when politics can't give you the answer. You know, that's when you go to see those transformative plays or transformative albums or you know, that you're in the midst of something that you can't explain with words. It just says the truth without words. It says the truth without saying anything. You're just picking it up. And, you know, that to me that's what art is. So there'll be a lot more of that, I think, if kids are not using smartphones and being connected to an advertising industry until they're 14, maybe 16. I don't know. I don't actually have a personal opinion.
Movement to
what the rules should be, but, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's what, if you're an artist, then you have to advocate for Jonathan Haidt's Free the Anxious Generation, because that's going to come with it. More art for sure. I think we've kind of talked about everything that we wanted to talk about. We were talking about this the other day a little bit, and then someone, I won't say who, came into the room and said, you should really share what you're talking about. And we thought, well, we'll stop talking about it. We'll talk about it on Zoom for the podcast. So I hope it's been useful, but I think it's probably come to the time where we have to pause now. So, is there anything else you want to say? You see, I've learned the communication skills. Is there anything else, Kate?
No, just space for listening. There was a bit.
I like it. Thank you.
Thank you.